Welcome back to the Armour Men's Health Hour with Dr. Mystery and Donna Lee.
Welcome back to the Armour Men's Health Hour. I'm Dr. Mystery, your host, here with my co-host, Donna Lee.
Good afternoon. Happy Sunday, everybody.
Happy Sunday. Donna, you want to tell people how to get a hold of us?
You can certainly reach out to us by phone or email. Our phone number is 512-238-0762. You can call us during the week, or you can send an email to armormenshealth@gmail.com. That's armormenshealth@gmail.com. We've gotten some amazing emails. Every week we get amazing emails, Dr. Mystery.
And we love those emails, so yes. Keep them coming. Today, I have a wonderful guest that's been a partner of ours in our practice for many years. This is Dr. Vagdevi Munyor.
Woohoo!
Thanks for coming today, Dr. Vagdevi. She's a licensed psychologist, a clinical assistant professor at the University of Texas at Austin. Kind of our in-house queen of sex therapy. She has been the mentor of virtually all of the sex therapy students that we get through our office. And so thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
You know, as I've done practice and treated men with erectile dysfunction and couples with different problems and infertility issues and cancer, it amazes me that there's not a psychologist in every urologist office.
Thank you. I agree.
Because there's so much mental in what we deal with every single day. But more than that, there's some high-level and confusing psychology issues that affect patients, right?
Absolutely. I tell a lot of my couples, you know, the biggest problem with sex is between your ears and not between your legs.
That's right. And that psychological kind of obstacles that people go through affects their decisions when it comes to cancer treatments, when it comes to whether or not to go through surgery for something, whether to start a medication. But certainly it comes with the sex stuff, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And patients and couples have problems within their relationship all the time, and they go to a therapist, for example. Mm-hmm. And I gave a talk to family therapists about 5 years ago, and I had them raise their hand if they deal with sexual issues, and only 10% did.
I know.
Is that what you find, too, amongst most kind of like just kind of couples therapists?
Absolutely. I think therapists are afraid to ask about sex, just like general medical professionals are also afraid to ask about sex, right? So somebody goes in for depression or anxiety, they see their GP, and the GP never says to them, tell me about your sex life, right? They just ask them about their mood and give them some medication and send them on their way. But sex is such a huge part of what makes us feel good.
For sure.
And so if we're not having good, healthy sex in our lives, it's going to affect everything else.
For sure.
You're going to feel so bummed out, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, it's ironic that so many men seek coupling behavior for sex. And then when they have problems with it, they don't really find somebody. And there's some interesting research on that. So patients don't bring it up with their doctors either. Right. And the number one reason is they're afraid it's going to embarrass the doctor.
Oh, wow.
They're not embarrassed. They're afraid it's going to embarrass you as right. the physician. So when I give talks to medical students, I always bring that up. Make yourself, you know, very open to being asked these questions. And don't be afraid if you don't know the answer, right?
That's right. That's right. I used to teach sex therapy at St. Edward's University. That was one of the classes I taught. And we would spend the first 3 weeks getting everybody comfortable, just saying all the words. You don't want to be saying to a patient, right, how are you doing with your erections?
That's right. You know, and when you're asking like an infertility couple about whether they're ejaculating in the vagina, I mean, these aren't like terms that they're aware of.
I know.
And so we try to use colloquial terms that they understand. Mm-hmm. What I'd like to start talking about today first is about couples. You know, when couples have trouble and they're arguing or they're having some issue and you don't talk about the sex stuff. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's a big pink elephant in the room that's being completely ignored, right?
That's right. Exactly.
And so when I'm counseling couples that are having trouble, let's say you have a couple that hasn't been having sex for a while. Breast cancer patients is a great example. You know, as she's going through therapy or going through reconstruction, oftentimes intimacy is gone. And so the sexual habit is lost.
That's right.
So I'd love for you to talk about sexual habits and what are some ways that we can break or expand upon sexual habits and what are some good ways to not get into negative sexual habits?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I could talk for an hour on this. I'm going to try to be brief. Basically, the problem is that when we meet somebody and we fall in love with them and we have sex, in the very beginning, we're really open to having all kinds of different kinds of sex. We're very adventurous. We, you know, I love you. You're so cute and whatever you want to do, I'll do, right? And then...
Wait. Where's that one?
That's in the beginning.
Oh, wait. Okay.
The first two, 3 months.
Oh, man.
Oh, no. 2 weeks.
I missed on that one.
Right? And so both partners are really willing to be adventurous and creative. And then they get together and you start to have sex with the same person 150 times. What do? Each of you begin to have a list of things that are okay to do. And what both people are doing is trying to manage their anxiety, their stress, how willing they are to do this, that, the other thing. So over time, they both begin to shorten that list. They cross things off that list. Well, I can't have blowjobs anymore, so I'm just not even going to ask about that. And certainly can't do anal, you know. Nobody's going to, my wife is not going to let me do that, or my husband isn't going to want to do that, whatever. So they cross things off their list. Now, 5 years later, you're having sex with the same person. Now it's 1,000 times that you've had sex, hopefully.
Hopefully.
And your list has gotten so short that there's only 3 or 4 things you do. So what happens with that is it's impossible to have healthy, creative, exhilarating sex if there's a rhythm and a pattern and a script.
Anything's going to be boring.
Anything's going to be boring.
That's right.
So what they've done is they've highlighted or worked towards anxiety management, trying to reduce anxiety and stress and reduce the list in order to achieve that. And then they begin to have erectile problems, arousal problems, orgasmic problems.
And now they're embarrassed.
And they're embarrassed, They're beginning to look at the plumbing. They're saying, what's wrong with your plumbing that you can't have an orgasm? It's not the plumbing. It's the fact that your orgasmic threshold may have gone up because there's only 3 things you're doing.
Right. And that's
right.
So in that comes some of the advice of like, well, maybe you just need a new girlfriend, right? Or a new boyfriend.
Which is this idea
that you just need something else
exactly.
To get you excited again.
And I think there is a lot of misinformation about, oh, because sex is boring, you should liven it up with a brand new person. Instead of thinking, maybe what we're trying to do in bed is what is not working. And we can liven it up by simply increasing that list, going from anxiety reduction to anxiety tolerance. When you begin to say, okay, I've had sex with you 250 times and it's gotten very boring, so we're going to try something new, it's going to create a little anxiety. But along with anxiety comes adrenaline. So the thrill of doing something new, pushing the boundaries, really experimenting, is going to bring back a little erotic energy into the relationship.
I love it. And really just a small conversation between a couple. It doesn't have to be a deep one about how, man, you don't excite me in bed anymore. I think that, you know, really approaching it by, you know, let's try something new. I love giving couples homework assignments.
Good.
You know, I love that. I love this idea, especially when a couple hasn't had sex for a long time due to some medical reason or something like that. I love trying to introduce small little activities that they do. And I think that having a sex therapist, you know, may help some couples do that, right?
Exactly. And a lot of them are really afraid to look for a sex therapist or go find a sex therapist. They're afraid of being belittled or mocked, or sometimes they're afraid that they're going to talk to a sex therapist and a sex therapist is going to want them to do really weird, kinky things in bed. And the fact is most...
Wait. That's not going to happen? Get out of here.
Depends on the kind of sex therapist. There are weird, kinky kinds of things you can do in bed.
Yeah. We will put them on our Facebook page.
But, you know, most couples out there are trying to do something that's more traditional, more vanilla. And I say you can have awesome vanilla sex if you know how to bring that erotic energy back in. And let me tell you, can I say one thing to men out there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Men have to learn how to transfer their arousal patterning from visual stimuli to tactile stimuli. So what they do early, and this is not their fault, our society teaches men how to get a hard-on from looking at something. So if you look hot, I'm going to get an erection. The problem is I'm not going to look hot as your wife for 100 years, right? I'm going to lose
what?
It. After
Wait, what about- am I learning today?
To find a
Honey, you look mystery. Wonderful.
Thank
and you will for this. I'm talking to my wife.
So at some point, both of us, and it's not just me, it's not just the wife, it's also the husband. We don't look so hot. If we had a mirror on the top of the ceiling and we were watching ourselves having sex.
Yeah. You've been to
as
my
long
bedroom.
As I'm flat, we're good.
So what do we have to do? We have to go from learning how to get aroused from looking at things. This is why you start using porn. To really learning how to get aroused from feeling things.
One of the things that confounds me when I get asked is about pornography and porn addiction. So I'll give you a classic patient. A classic patient will be a guy who comes in. He'll come in for some other problem. testicular pain or erectile dysfunction or something, you know, you can kind of tell that he's something on his mind. Usually the story is going to be that he has trouble either getting an erection or achieving orgasm with his partner. And he's wondering if maybe his use of pornography is getting into it. And he wants to know if he's addicted to porn. And I almost always tell him first that if you have to ask, you probably are. So, you know, not to get too much into the scientific weeds about it, but maybe you could give us some of your background or thoughts on when is it enough? Why does it kind of impact a man's sexuality? You know, maybe even some advice on how people kind of work themselves out of it.
So is porn addiction real? Yes. But you know what? You can get addicted to just about anything. You want to go gaze at grass growing, you can get addicted to that. And what addiction is
not quite as much fun, though.
Not quite as much fun, true. Well, you know, it depends on you.
And there's not that many varieties of grass.
Depends on how much you like grass.
Well, you know, lots of different kinds of grass that are quite fun.
All right.
The idea is that any addiction is a feelings management technology. Trying to have sex with your partner doesn't work out, doesn't go so well. Maybe you don't get an erection. Maybe you don't have an orgasm. You get bummed out and you say to yourself, oh, I'm not getting good sex. So let me go watch this porn video and then I'll have a better erection and I'll have a better orgasm. And the first 5, 10, 15 times, that'll be true, right? But then what'll happen is you begin to turn to the porn more and more and more and less to your partner. You begin to see the porn as an easy solution. Having sex becomes like an itch that you just itch or that you're relieving yourself, right? You're like, oh, I feel some desire. Oh, I'm going to go to the porn. The problem is the porn industry has made billions on this and they can provide you with a huge variety.
Huge variety.
Allegedly. You wouldn't know anything about that, right, Dr. Mystery? Yeah. They're going to provide you with brand new stuff all the time. And so the variety, the stimulus value of porn is infinite. But what happens then is you begin to develop your arousal patterning around first visual stimuli. So you're really reinforcing getting aroused based on what you're looking at. Because sure. Porn is a two-dimensional view of two people that are not you having sex. And so you're not actually feeling the feelings they're having. Most of the time, if it's commercial porn, they're not really having any feelings. They're faking it. And so you're really getting aroused.
What? I don't think so. That's so authentic. That pizza delivery guy, I think he was into it.
Right here. This is pepperoni.
It wasn't the pizza delivery guy. It was the housewife who was faking it.
Oh, my goodness.
See, and he didn't know.
I forgot.
It's a little harder for him to fake it, right? Because he actually has to show up on TV with all his equipment.
I also think that, you know, it creates this expectation that you get it whenever you want it.
That's right. It's available 24/7.
In some ways, you're by yourself, so you don't have to, like, think about the feelings of another person or, you know, all the stuff that we put into, like, the coupling in the relationship. And I'm actually worried that younger kids today, with the wide availability of pornography, the rampant use of it, is going to take away from some of that social patterning and conditioning of how to, like, have somebody get attracted to you.
Right. It also takes away from what sex is supposed to be about, which is bringing yourself to an intimate experience with another human being. So sex isn't about what happens between the erection and the orgasm. Sex is all of the things that happen before, during, and after that experience. But porn just makes it about arousal to orgasm.
And it's easy. And I think that a lot of couples get affected by it. So if somebody thinks, or if a couple feels that may be kind of an issue, is there a way to get out of that patterning?
Yes. The first thing to do is to tell your partner about it and tell them that you're doing this. Because the moment you let the secret out, it begins to lose its stimulus value, right?
That's right.
The other is, if you're watching porn, watch it with your partner. Because what'll happen is if the two of you begin to choose porn that both of you are aroused to, you're going to choose very different kind of porn.
Which is really a lesson for a lot of women out there, right? Mm-hmm. It's this idea that
the man's cheating.
Being completely against it isn't going to help anything.
No, it just drives him underground. He's going to do it more and more out of sight, right? And the other thing is that for women, get out of the moral attitude about it, right?
It's happening.
Yes.
Yeah, you can't, I mean.
And you know, there's no moral judgment here. Let's get out of the moral judgment, because what that does is it puts one partner kind of in a superior position relative to the other person. I don't do any porn, but you do. Good for you, but that's not helping.
That's right. That's not helping you as a couple.
That's right.
It's not going to help, you know, him. And I think that when people get very, very much kind of used to visuals, like direct and, you know, very dramatic.
Super stimulus.
Mm-hmm. That smaller stimulus, it becomes harder, really.
Absolutely.
Not harder, in fact.
Right. So there's actually some research. Can I talk about this? The effect that people get from intense pleasure they get really can be from what's called a supernormal stimulus. This was research done by Deirdre Barrett. And Nico Tingbergen, a Nobel Prize-winning ethologist, described the supernormal stimulus as a stimulus that evokes a much larger response than one that has evolutionary significance.
Right. And you can totally see how people can get addicted to that. What a great conversation. Mm-hmm. Dr. Vagdevi, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to have your information for your clinic on our Facebook page. And really look forward to making you a regular part of our show. So thank you so much.
I love that. Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. And we used a bunch of Sunday words today, didn't we?
Oh, boy. Donna. All right. So why don't you tell people how to get a hold of us? We'll take your comments, of course, positive and negative necessary, I guess. But, you know, this show was really trying to get at difficult to talk about topics. And I think that we tried to broach some of those today. So thank you for joining us.
The Armour Men's Health Hour is brought to you by Urology Specialists of Austin. For questions or to schedule an appointment, please call 512-238-0762 or online at armormenshealth.com.